It's time for Eco Talk with host Betsy Rosenberg.
She'll be great. She's a very smart, capable person who knows exactly what took place and will lay out the facts. And that's what the American people want to see.
I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
Well, so maybe we put words in George's mouth, but hey, at least that's what he should say and do. Welcome to Eco Talk. I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and the first half of today's show is going to focus on the facts of climate change. We'll be speaking with two professors whose work on climate science has been distorted and misrepresented by the ostrich community, including the Wall Street Journal, it seems, and dinosaur novelist Michael Crichton. We'll get the nonfiction version of things from Professor Peter Doran of the University of Illinois at Chicago and Professor Naomi Oreskes of the University of California in San Diego. Well, in Back to the Future, Michael J. Fox asked crazy Christopher Lloyd why he built a time machine with a DeLorean, and Lloyd says, if you're going to build a time machine, why not do it with some style? Well, Tesla Motors has heeded this advice. Their new electric Tesla Roadster is the car of the future, but it's here now. It's faster than a Ferrari and emits nothing but style from its tailpipe. Doesn't even have a tailpipe, I bet. Martin Eberhardt and Mike Harrigan of Tesla Motors will be talking about how driving a car that turns heads while being clean and quiet is a really great thing to do, even in high-tech and sophisticated Silicon Valley. And then a secret that we'll not be quiet about, Dan Howells of Forest Ethics joins us to discuss Victoria's dirty little secret. You know all those catalogs that men especially can't help but look at? Well, every single one of the millions of catalogs produced each year are made from virgin endangered forests. We'll get the skinny and give some more exposure to that campaign because it hasn't quite gotten out there to the mainstream. But first, we're going to turn to some serious news and developments, but we're going to get it straight from the source, which always helps. Naomi Oreskes is a professor of history at the University of California, San Diego. She published her global warming study in the respected Science Journal, only to become the subject of anti-global warming gossip weeks later. Respectable publications like the Wall Street Journal have come out with undocumented misinformation about her report. A former consultant to the EPA, Oreskes has been used and abused, it seems, by the anti-global warming community. In a recent op-ed piece in the Washington Post, she called for the debate on global warming to end so that we can focus on the problem at hand and solve it sooner rather than later. Welcome to EcoTalk.
Thank you, Betsy.
We tried to get you on a few weeks ago when you were in Washington, D.C. There were some hearings underway, and you were the focus of them?
Well, I wouldn't say I was the focus, but I was part of the I was attacked. My study was attacked as part of the campaign by certain people to deny the reality of global warming.
Now, let's back up a little bit. You're a history professor. Why are you writing about climate change?
Right. Well, my field is history of science, and my specialty is studying scientific communities. I'm interested in how scientific communities evaluate evidence, how they make judgments, how they decide that something is demonstrated and proven, which turns out to be a pretty complicated question. So that's what I study, and I particularly study the earth sciences. So most of my previous work, really all of my previous work, has been on the history of earth science, mostly to do with debates over continental drift and plate tectonics. So I know a lot about how scientific communities evaluate complex evidence, particularly in the earth sciences, where the data are often very complicated and noisy and messy. And so with that background, I became interested in the question of what scientists did and didn't know about global warming.
We'll talk about drift from global warming to gossip. That was the title of the op-ed piece you wrote recently in the Washington Post. It was called My Global Warming Study Misinterpreted by Gossip. Explain that.
Well, so my study was published 2 years ago in Science, which, as you said, is the leading peer-reviewed scientific journal in America. And it was based on an analysis of published scientific papers in peer-reviewed journals. So I was interested in trying to understand what it was that scientists think that they know about global warming and what the areas of continuing discussion are still. And as I said, that was published in Science, which is a peer-reviewed journal, and my study was based on peer-reviewed work, so work that's withstood the scrutiny of scientific evaluation. But shortly after it came out, almost within days, I started being attacked, particularly on the Internet, by people who claimed that my study was fraudulent, that it was wrong, that my methods were erroneous, which honestly I don't even know how they could have determined that even if it were true in 3 days, but that's pretty much what happened. In fact,
right, in 3 days. They tested your research in 3 days, right?
Right, that was the claim, although clearly it was faulty. But that was 2 years ago. But every time something comes up with respect to global warming, something important, that allegation resurfaces. And it's been spread on the Internet for about 2 years now, and it's never been based on any actual published analysis. It's just essentially, as I said, it's really gossip. It's a kind of accusation that isn't based on any evidence. But it's been circulating for about 2 years, and most recently the Wall Street Journal picked it up, and so they published an op-ed piece in June which made this claim again. And so at that point I thought, well, now that it's in the Wall Street Journal, I'd pretty much been ignoring the attacks on the Internet for 2 years, but when the Wall Street Journal took it up, then I thought, well, this needs a response, and so I did respond.
Now, I understand your study was also one of those cited in An Inconvenient Truth, Al Gore's movie, of course.
Right.
Did you have something to do with that reference to 928 studies on global warming?
Well, that is my study. The study that he refers to is my study. I didn't have any direct role in making the movie, and I don't have any links to the Gore group, but that he does discuss the study in the movie.
And as I recall, and that was compared to zero?
Correct. That was the important result of the study. So we were interested in seeing what the state of play was in the scientific community. And when I began the study, I certainly expected that we would find some articles that disagreed with the mainstream view, because in almost any scientific debate, you can always find somebody who has a different opinion. I mean, that's just normal. So when we took a sample of the scientific literature, we took a sample of just about 1,000 papers. We got rid of a few that weren't actually about global warming, even though they claim they were. But so we ended up with just over 900 papers. We read the abstracts of those 900 papers, and we found that not a single one of them, not one, disagreed with the consensus position as defined by the U.S. National Academy of Sciences, which is that global warming is real, it's happening now, and it's caused largely by human activities.
Again, this would be laughable if the consequences of delaying action on global warming weren't so serious, because we know it has been delayed.
Exactly, and that's really that's the point, and that's the point of work I've been doing since 2004, which is really studying this whole question of the strategy of delay. And what I've learned is that this has been a deliberate strategy to convince the American people that the science is uncertain, because if the science is uncertain, then it would be premature and somewhat rash to start making major policy decisions if we didn't really know what was going on. So if you can convince the American people that the science is uncertain, then in effect you've won a certain kind of political argument. And so that's the strategy. So when my paper came along and said, well, hey, guys, the science is not uncertain. In fact, there's an amazing degree of consensus here, more than I, as a historian of science, expected to find, that was a result that certain people didn't want to hear.
And just to refresh our listeners' memories, it was an MIT professor named Richard Lindzen who wrote the op-ed piece in the Wall Street Journal stating that your research had been refuted.
Correct.
Does he accept money from oil companies and coal interests?
Well, I haven't studied Richard Lindzen's personal life very well, but I do understand that he has been a consultant to oil companies. I know he's been an expert witness in several court cases defending the interests of coal companies, and he certainly has links to several organizations which have well-established, well-documented links to the fossil fuel industry.
Now, last week there was an announcement, ExxonMobil saying that they're not going to be funding groups like the Competitive Enterprise Institute, which are among the organizations that say it's not necessarily a problem, even if it is real, and, you know, casting all that doubt. How significant is that? And that followed the Royal Society in England asking Exxon to stop funding anti-global warming misinformation groups.
Well, if they really follow through on it, then it's extremely significant, because all of these groups have been successful in their campaigns, in part because they have been well-funded, and It has worked. I mean, there's been enormous delay. Remember, the Rio Summit, which adopted the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, was in 1992. And our first President Bush, George Herbert Walker Bush, signed the Rio Summit and declared that he was determined to put that treaty into action. That was in 1992. Here we are in 2006, and we still have effectively no national policy on global climate change. So this has been an enormously effective strategy of delay. And ExxonMobil has had something to do with that delay. And so if they are finally going to cease and desist from spreading misinformation, then that is all to the good.
I wonder if they finally decided to see An Inconvenient Truth. Maybe some executives actually saw those glaciers melting.
Well, I really couldn't say. I mean, I frankly can't understand their strategy. It doesn't make sense to me from a business perspective. It doesn't make sense from an ethical or moral perspective. But nevertheless, it is what they've been doing for more than a decade now.
Well, they've gotten nothing but bad PR, not only for this tactic, but also just the profits, record profits, $39 billion or something? Billion, what was it?
Exactly.
Outrageous.
I assume that must be the business calculation, that as long as you're making profits, then you continue doing business as usual.
But it can't be business as usual, and even maybe Exxon's starting to get that.
I hope so.
I mean, but there's a lot of damage there, you know. They should be held accountable, you know. They should put their profits into
damage. And I was just looking today at there was an ABC News poll that I saw recently that was done last March, and it said that 85% of the American people now do believe that global warming is probably occurring. So that's good. Mm-hmm. That means that American people are more or less on track about this. But here's the thing. Only 30% believe that it's caused mainly by things that people do.
And we're going to talk about what people can do about global warming. I'm afraid we're out of time, but I thank you for giving us your time. Professor Naomi Oreskes, Professor of History at the University of California, San Diego. We'll be right back.